Welcome back to Docs Who Lift Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Spencer Nadolski, and I got my co-host here, Dr. Carl Nadolski Jr., the greatest endocrinologist ever. And today we will be talking all about what is the best diet. Now, what's the best diet for what, really? I guess we got to talk
about. Yeah, what are we talking about? I think we're going to talk about specifically weight loss, and then we could get into weight-related disease a little bit with that. Because otherwise, this would take 8 hours. So we'll have to break this up a little bit. But let's just focus on the weight, fat loss specifically. For normal people, for most people out there, we don't have to necessarily split the hairs for athletes per se, but it's generally the similar, you know, concepts.
Yeah, so this is a good thing because you have to start from the beginning of, like, how do you lose weight in the first place? How does it all happen? And then how does diet play a role? Because what some people will say is like, okay, is a ketogenic diet the best? Is this type of diet the best? So if you start with just the principles of energy balance and the principles of losing fat, I think then it all starts to fall into place of, okay, this concept of the best diet is kind of... It doesn't really, there's technically no real best.
Yeah. Bottom line up front.
So, but we're going to give some principles here.
Yeah. But you're right. We do need to go back. Now we did a talk, we did a podcast and talking about obesity as a disease. And I think we got into some of the nitty gritty of how the energy balance system is very complex. You know, I think we got into the area in our hypothalamus that essentially controls our appetite, metabolism, and I don't know if we got into the whole debate on the set point, how our hypothalamus and our adipose tissue and all the different regulatory hormones are trying to essentially keep us at a certain level of adipose tissue. That's a whole different discussion, but you can refer back to that talk.
Yeah. The carbohydrate talk as well.
We did the whole carbohydrate insulin model hypothesis of obesity. So now we're going to kind of bring it back and talk about, well, it is an energy balance issue. Energy balance is more complex than people give it credit for, which is, I think, why the people like to get into the carbohydrate insulin model. They like to get into keto. They like to come up with these sexy plans to say, well, it's not just calories in, calories out, so you got to do these things. Well, it is very complex, but it still ultimately is an energy balance equation. It just has a lot of complexities, especially within any individual. And everyone is a little different, by the way.
Yeah. So in order to lose fat, you have to eat fewer calories than you burn. Just full stop. It just doesn't matter. You have to figure that out. The problem is that our bodies, as my brother pointed out, our bodies drive against us with hunger, appetite, all sorts of cravings, different types of, it's not all just straight up hunger, it's appetite in general, which includes other reasons of why we eat. Our bodies and our environments are kind of fighting against us. But no matter what, it doesn't matter with the hormone milieu, it doesn't matter whatever else is going on, you still have to find a way to eat fewer calories than you burn. So when it comes to weight loss, what diet is going to help you do that specifically? So that's why the concept of energy balance and this whole idea of a calorie deficit, eating fewer calories than you burn, is so important. And it doesn't mean that you have to count calories. We're not saying that. We talked about that in the carbohydrate insulin model.
You certainly can.
You can. It just means that the principle of energy balance for weight loss specifically, it matters most. It does. Ketogenic diets and all these different diets, they're all based on this principle that they're somehow going to find a way and help you eat fewer calories than you burn. Beyond that, then, once we establish that principle, now it's time to find the best diet for you to figure this out.
Yeah.
And so
what
kind of dietary pattern, I would say, like what dietary pattern then helps you eat fewer calories than you burn?
Yeah. Well, you know, so think about it. Let's go back and think about the most evidence-based guidelines that have been written for diets and weight loss. You know, we think about the Obesity Society guidelines from, what are they, 2012. I was part of the ACE 2016 guidelines. They have different recommendations, and these are very evidence-based, and we can talk about, you know, some of the nuances of these, but they talk about, well, estimate, you know, that 1,200 calorie plan for females, 1,800 or so for males, taking what their baseline dietary intake is and creating a 500-750 calorie deficit. But then they go on to talk about, well, we can do Mediterranean DASH, we can do low carb, ketogenic, low fat, volumetric, you know, kind of flexitarian, you know, high fiber, lots of plants, higher protein. And then I think we'll talk about meal replacements. My bottom line up front is that I personally really hate to make any of these concepts mutually exclusive. I think we can take the data from all the studies that show all these different dietary plans work and personalize it for people. And then, you know, there are some nuances that different people might need a few different things for what their health problems are. You know, some people might need to cut more carbs. Some people might need to change their fats, cut their fats. You know, we can talk about intermittent fasting and time-restricted feeding. But that's where the kind of the basic guidelines are. So let's go from there and talk about some of the specific ones.
Yeah. So I would say, you know, the dietary pattern is very, once you understand this concept of energy balance for weight loss, and we understand that we want people to eat more nutrient-dense foods, things that have a lot of different types of nutrients in them, plants, but even some animal products can have nutrients that we like. What of these foods also are filling, satiating, and have fewer calories, that are going to help you eat fewer calories without feeling miserable? That's it, because we're obesity physicians. If we're trying to help somebody lose weight and keep it off, we need to make sure that they're able to eat fewer calories without feeling miserable, which includes feeling just nonstop hungry and unsatiated, like have this unsatiable appetite despite what they're eating. So what are those foods? What are those foods that we would recommend then?
Well, so, you know, I think, you know, when we talk about, well, how can we approach this with an individual patient? You know, I think getting a diet log is pretty important. Right? Because then we can see what their current patterns are. You know, ask them what they're eating, if they can do a diet log, whatever, talk to them about it. And we got to create that energy deficit. I think one of the first things that we need to do with people is, it was Kevin Hall's inpatient ward trial. I love that study that he did where they compared the refined processed foods to the more whole foods, unprocessed whole foods, and they let people eat as much as they want.
Yeah.
I love that trial because it really just showed that people automatically took in dramatically fewer calories with the whole unprocessed foods than when they were exposed to the unlimited processed refined foods. So I think that's the first sort of thing to do with people. Take a look at what they're right. eating, and then you can help them maybe change that. That's one thing to do.
Yeah. I will point out that, I used to do diet logs on everybody. What I found is that everybody that was struggling with weight loss, they all said that they're eating salad all day and not. So I actually got away from that a little bit. It depends. There's some people that they don't realize that they're getting we call it the sneaky calories coming from condiments, which, you know, ketchup didn't make anybody have obesity, but add that up with the sauces and the different things that you're eating, it could add a couple hundred calories. These other bite licks and tastes, they're getting in these sneaky calories from somewhere. But if you're able to shift,
I think you can get out of people their dietary pattern from it though. Because they'll usually tell you that sort of thing. I mean, so by the way, everybody underestimates what they're eating, right? We all do it when we diet log.
Pretty much everybody. Some people, maybe if they're trying to gain weight, they may overestimate. But
okay, yeah, you're right. So going the other way. But I think what you can do from that discussion is help them change from a refined processed pattern to a more whole food pattern. I mean, this goes to our, you know, we talked about artificial sweeteners. Think about how many people are drinking sugary beverages.
Yeah.
That's a low hanging fruit.
Switch them to diet or water.
So that's an easy thing.
One of the easiest things.
And what if they're eating restaurant food? What if they're going out to eat all the time? And it doesn't have to be fast food, by the way.
Yeah. So they inject freaking oil and butter into some of these foods. It looks like it's healthy. Your baked potato. One time I was doing a bodybuilding competition. I'll never do it again because I felt like I was starving at the end. But I was trying to eat fewer calories towards the end, get really lean, and the baked potato that I ordered, I could tell it was soaked in butter. I was like, oh my God, people don't even know that. I want a baked potato. You think it's just a baked potato? No, they still inject freaking fat into that thing. So finding ways.
And even the otherwise healthy piece of salmon. Oh,
here's some examples. So if somebody's eating a highly processed breakfast of some sort, it's usually like a frappuccino of some sort, maybe with some muffin in for breakfast. So you switch them over to try to get them to do more of that black coffee with skim milk, maybe, and some Splenda or something, some sugar-free syrup or whatever. Or you can do a protein shake within the coffee. We call it a lean latte, trademark, by the way. Anyway, you get them to shift to more something like that. Even though, just an aside, the protein powders are technically processed, but we would call those
technically
more processed. A more functional processed type of food. Or you can switch them to,
and we'll talk about those more as a meal replacement. Yeah, too.
You can switch them more to
which has the best data, probably.
A more whole food type of pattern would be something like you're eating whole fruit. You can have some eggs, egg whites, or something like that. More whole types of protein, if you want that type of thing. But lunch, you know, a lot of people are eating out for lunch because their coworkers are going to get Chick-fil-A or they're going to get Thai food or whatever it is. And you know,
we just got sued by Chick-fil-A.
I don't think. Well, Chick-fil-A tastes good. Maybe they can be a sponsor of this podcast. We'll shill out the grilled chicken.
We'll reach out.
I do get the so you don't have to cut out fast food. By the way, you can shift it within the fast food. It's just harder. But at Chick-fil-A, I actually get grilled chicken nuggets with green beans. There you go. I guess maybe I'm keto.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
I'm keto.
Except that the green beans are soaked in butter.
They could be. They could be. They might be. I'm not sure. It's possible. Probably why they're so good. That's possible. So anyway, you shift, and ideally, yes, we'd get our food from home, but if you can't, then we'd shift within that fast food to try to eat something more. And some of these things are just so obvious. I think people understand. Like, people have a pretty good idea that we should, the donuts at work. Yeah, we should probably not have that donut.
And maybe people know that stuff.
And maybe we should instead just eat the apple. Yeah. These are like common sense things. We're talking about diet. We're going to talk about how to change your habits and, you know, potentially use medicines at some point to help out. But if you just have no idea what to do, this is the discussion. Shifting to those types of foods are going to help you eat fewer calories while feeling more satiated and fuller longer. So vegetables. Whole vegetables, whole fruit, lentils, legumes,
more vegetables, beans,
lean meats,
and even fruit.
Yeah, fruit. We love berries and melons, but even citrus.
You know, it's interesting as we talk about shifting from a processed, refined diet to a more whole food dietary plan that automatically creates an energy deficit. You'll notice that when we use specific examples, it sort of automatically lowers carbohydrate intake, lowers sugar intake, lowers fat intake. Yep. And so then that really kind of jumps us to, well, what about these low carb, low fat diets?
Yep.
That we'll get into, because doing that sort of dietary pattern, just it makes that happen. It's all good.
Yeah. If you listen to our lecture on the carbohydrates and insulin, you'll know that it just doesn't matter. It doesn't matter the macronutrient profile. If you eat fewer calories and you're saying stay satiated, the macronutrient differences are almost clinically meaningless, unless we're talking about glycemia, by the way. And that's we will have a whole conversation about diets and glycemia. We're talking about specifically weight loss right here. So as my brother said,
and we're not making this up, by the way. I mean, this is very evidence-based. I mean, there have been plenty of different meta-analyses of all the different trials looking at different types of low carb, different severities of low carb versus low fat and moderate nutrients like DASH diets and Mediterranean diets. And all these meta-analyses ultimately show maybe some differences at 6 months, not clinically relevant, mind you,
yeah.
but lots of it. But at 12 months, it always ends up being about the same. And again, you know, going back to like Kevin Hull's meta-analysis of when they really, really, really tightly control people in their metabolic wards,
yeah.
The meta-analyses of that doesn't show any difference. No. So the macronutrient differences, other than controlling for protein, might be something to think about. We probably do need to make sure people are getting enough quality protein, but not cutting that out per se.
Right.
But even that's, you know,
small, up for a very debate. a small benefit. And you can look at these ideas, protein leverage, all these different things. Protein has a small, as a macronutrient, has a small effect maybe on satiation and satiety. And technically you don't utilize
more so than the others anyways.
Yeah, utilize the energy from protein as much for creating fat. So it's not as efficient at creating fat, and it may be more beneficial to go from something, say, like 10 or 15% of your calories from protein to more like 30, 40%. There may be a benefit there, but honestly, compared to just total energy balance in general, it's relatively small. But it may help you actually do it. But the dietary pattern is most important. So
I was just going to say, what about people with insulin resistance? Because that comes up all the time, you know, that we have to go back and reference the Diet Fits trial.
Yeah,
and
so
the genetics, you know, all these things where people say, well, but I have this genetic or that genetic or insulin resistance, insulin secretion. The bottom line is, I mean, we don't really have any data to suggest that any of those macronutrient differences help them. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, no, they thought that there might be something. They did these what they call post hoc analyses. They looked back at the data and was like, oh, it looks like those who had most insulin resistance did well or better on these low carb diets, and it might make sense physiologically because if you're
that sounds right.
It sounds right.
Reasonable.
And, you know, they've tried to test this multiple times and they don't really come out with anything. We will say, despite I make memes making fun of keto and low carb all the time, when someone has insulin resistance and, you know, dysglycemia, we tend to go low carb. Like, don't get me wrong. It's just an option potentially to go lower fat and lower calorie overall, regardless, because the energy balance trumps everything.
You know, and to be fair, probably most people are eating too much in the way of high, you know, processed, refined carbohydrates, starches, that especially if they have type 2 diabetes, those are, you know, they're causing hyperglycemia, depending on their situation, their severity, and all that stuff. So, you know, it's an easy area to cut. You know, we can replace a lot of high calorie carbs with low fat, low carb vegetables and beans, legumes, things that are just definitively good for you. So, yeah, we do actually cut a lot of carbs. And I think most people do. And that's a good area to start with.
Yeah. Carbs are calories. Fat are calories. So here's what thing people think are fat or we got to cut out the carbs because they're fattening. Well, when they think of that, they cut out their chips, which are both fat and carbohydrates. They cut out cookies, pies, all these other things that are highly, by the way, refinedly processed, ultra-processed foods that are also high in fat and carbohydrates. So it's not necessarily just the carbs or necessarily just the fat. It was just easily overeaten, yummy, high-fat, high-carb, high-calorie foods. So when we help patients, we go, energy balance, number one. That doesn't necessarily help guide anybody. It just helps as a principle understand the process. Number two, we go to dietary patterns, satiating, filling foods that have lots of nutrients and fewer calories. Then the third step here, one of the step is figuring out portion sizes. Some people just, they can't figure out portions. And so they're like, I'm eating healthy. I promise I'm eating healthy, what you're talking about. And I'm still struggling with weight loss. And that's because they're still eating bigger portions. They're getting more calories in from little things like the sauces, like I said, the condiments, the drinks, maybe certain things that they just don't even know that they're getting. So then it comes down to, yeah, you can at least do a dietary audit and weigh and track things for maybe a week or two. We don't necessarily have people do that forever, but it's okay to audit and kind of see where some of these are coming from. And then the last thing we do and discuss are, okay, are there ways to just cut out calories without thinking? And that's where the meal replacements come in. I did a TikTok.
And we have some of the best data for weight loss and diabetes using meal replacements. Okay, I know you're about to talk about your TikTok that got everyone upset.
People got so mad. TikTok, I would say the toxic comments on TikTok. I've never seen it. It's really weird. I don't know where these people come from, but I posted about, here's an easy way to cut calories. Instead of eating, you know, some 500 to 1,000 calorie meal, boom, drink a protein shake that's a meal replacement that's 200 calories. And then you just cut out an easy 300 to 700 calories of your day. And if you're consistent with that, boom, you just lost X amount of weight, depending on your current size, whatever. People are upset. People are like, are you kidding me? 200 calories isn't a meal. Well, some people fast for a day, so like it doesn't matter if that's
it's a meal if you make it a meal.
It's a meal if it's a meal.
If you replace a meal with it, that's your meal.
That's your meal.
That's the whole point.
Then the people are like, that's not sustainable. Well, you know, I posted the meta now.
Actually, the data show it might be.
It might be if you do it. You know, some people do it long term, and those who do it long term are successful. Now, again, it's only if you do it. So that's not really helpful if you hate them and you don't like to do it and you're still hungry. It's just, it is an option. It's one.
And there's all sorts of versions, by the way, that you can find.
Yeah. So like,
you know, find one you like.
I use the Premier Protein Shakes, but like, honestly, you could use a can of lentil soup and different other packaged foods, which most people like packaged foods aren't good. But the data show if you have something easily packaged and convenient, and you replace some ad libitum, meaning eating as much as you want, you're cooking it and eating however much you want without necessarily weighing. If you replace that with a packaged food of some sort, whether it's a protein shake, a can of lentil soup, or even a microwavable meal, you lose weight and you actually do better than if you were to cook your own meal, because you have to, a lot more thinking goes into cooking your own meal. And, you know, I guess people will say, but it's processed and there's a lot of sodium. What about all the salt? And these are things to consider. You can get lower salt versions, yada, yada, yada. But the gist is, for weight loss, you're finding an easy way to cut out calories. That's it. That's it. In a sustainable manner.
Yeah. And, the most recent, I think, really good quality publication was not that long ago, looking at, diet advice for obesity and type 2 diabetes, and looking at remission. It was an umbrella review of meta-analyses, and it systematically looked at interventional trials, and it showed very clearly that, one, creating the energy deficit was the critical component to weight loss using, you know, low-calorie diets. Two, that meal replacement formulas were definitely the most effective methods for weight loss and type 2 diabetes remission. And three, that the macronutrient content wasn't very important for the outcomes.
Yeah.
And so that really was a pretty good conclusive sort of big analysis of all these things. But coming back to, we can use all these different things to help any individual in any different way based upon their preferences. We haven't even gotten to, you know, throwing in some, you know, intermittent fasting or time restricted feeding.
Yeah. So
you can do that too.
Let's just,
their data does show that it's as good as caloric restriction.
We'll throw that in there right now. So basically, you use fasting in a way to modify time and when you eat to lower your calories. So this is another way. It's not dietary pattern. It's just simply when you eat, shifting. It shifts how much you can eat in a certain amount of time. If you have 12 hours to eat, you might eat more. Whereas if you shift it into 6 hours a day of eating, you know, you use time and then you technically have this window of feeding time. You can take days where you don't eat at all or only eat one small meal a day. It's just another way to do it, and your body can adapt, and some people tolerate it better in terms of satiety, and it's an option. It's not something, there doesn't seem to be any magical thing beyond the calorie restriction. There's studies ongoing about whether it has health benefits beyond the calorie restriction. We cannot say if that is the case or not, but in terms of weight loss,
there's some suggestion of some maybe stuff.
It's just for weight loss, though, and this is what this podcast, I guess, when we're talking about best diet for weight loss, that the intermittent fasting or different ways of fasting will not reduce your adiposity, your weight, beyond any extra calorie restriction that's out there. Yeah. So,
but it can be a tool if people desire.
Yeah, exactly.
You can you know, we may at some point we'll talk about diets for more specific obesity related diseases, and we'll talk maybe more about Mediterranean. I know we tend to be shills for Mediterranean pattern diets, getting your fat from nuts and seeds and fish and olive oil, because those have some of the best cardiovascular, cardiometabolic data. But all these things, again, they don't have to be mutually exclusive. They share a lot of commonalities. You know, if we go back to the whole changing our refined processed food diet, you know, the SAD, you know, the sick American diet,
standard,
or whatever.
Standard to, American
you know,
diet.
Whole food diet.
Standard.
Yeah, the sick, yeah, whatever. Well, okay, I guess it could be sick American be. Diet, huh?
Doesn't matter.
Yeah, whatever. Same difference. You know what yeah. I mean? You know, but like a low carb, think about all the things these share, the common aspects of these. Paleo, Mediterranean, low carb, plant-based. You know, they all are less refined processed foods. They're more vegetables. They don't have added sugars and refined processed grains. You know, they're higher fiber, stuff like that. And then you can personalize it from there. You can do, you know, replace some meals with meal replacements, especially if maybe they were eating out before. That's where I feel like I do that a lot with patients. They're, you know, they go, they're eating out just because they're on the go, not even because they want it. But, and then, you know, we stock them up with meal replacements, bam, they yeah. do that. Replace their sugary drinks with diet beverages. We, you know, go back to our artificial sweetener talk. Throw, you know, if they want to do some time-restricted feeding. I do actually have a lot of patients who do pretty well with like a, you know, sort of a 16-hour fast. They like that, and they do pretty well. I don't have a lot of people that do true intermittent fasting where they do like a, you know, 500 calorie one day and regular the next day. I don't have a lot of people that
yeah,
like
that's
that.
The alternate day fasting thing. You're talking about, the time-restricted. You're talking about time-restricted feeding where it's like...
Time-restricted feed where there's a 16-hour window of fast. People seem to yeah. like that. They yeah, do well with that, I feel like. But again, these things are not mutually exclusive. You combine them all in any individual way to ultimately go back and create that energy
that's
deficit.
It. That is it, folks.
Yeah.
So that's all we really got, you know, when it comes to you find a way to get an energy deficit, meaning you're eating fewer calories than you burn. You find a way to make that less miserable by eating satiating, filling foods. You know, you can play around with the macronutrients for your energy and performance in the gym and all this type of thing. But in general, the macronutrients mm-hmm. don't matter a ton for weight loss. We do want enough protein so we keep our muscle. But most important is lifting weights in that anyway. And then you change. Yep. You can replace meals. You can fast. You can find other ways to reduce your calories. But ultimately, that's the gist. So anything else? Any closing remarks?
Well, so, you know, adherence to these dietary efforts yeah. is easier said than done, right?
Right.
And we know some of those trials that we sort of on the side mentioned that compare low carb, low fat, all these things, they ultimately end up showing that the adherence is what matters the most. Well, we've talked about how the biology makes it hard for people to adhere to these efforts. And so, you know, don't feel like you've failed if you're struggling with this. Yeah. That is where, you know, we're not shilling for medicine, but we do have medicines available that help. Well, yeah, okay, yeah, you maybe. But, you know, we have medicines available to help work in those areas of the brain yeah. that work against us, and surgery. Yeah. These are all tools to personalize
therapy. We will have podcasts all about that, so do not worry. I'm sure there's people like, what medicines? Tell me what medicine. We'll have podcasts going very in-depth, more than you want to hear about these medicines. So this is all about dietary patterns, diet, the best diet for weight loss. So that's about it. Please subscribe. Please rate us. Give us a 5-star if you like us. Tell your friends. Share it.
And a 0-star if you hate us.
No, don't do that. Yeah, don't just exit. Just please exit.
Just joking. Don't do that. Please.
Don't ever do that. Anyway, thanks for listening. Until the next time.